Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome back to our watch club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3.
They fanned me.
Who?
My brothers.
Welcome back to Watch Club. My name is CTO831, but you can call me Hugs. And this is our Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 14. If you're joining us for the first time, this is Watch Club, our weekly review series, kind of like a book club, but way better. Keep in mind, we will be going into full spoilers for this series and Star Wars in general. So if you haven't watched this week's episode yet, be sure to do so. And then come right back in less than 12 parsecs. Now, before we all replace our Scomplink hands with droid hands, let me introduce you to our experimental crew of ragtag troopers. First up, he's taller than a Jawa, smaller than Jabba, and just as entertaining as Jar Jar. He's CT1231, also known as Edit.
Hello. How are ya?
Hello, he's British now. We get a Scottish droid in this episode, which I was super stoked to see. So
stoked, oh, cool. Yeah. I was stoked.
Apparently, Edit's not going to let me get away with anything tonight. But listen, right behind him in the lineup, we are so glad to have a true friend and war hero joining us yet again, and her name is CTO118, but you can call her Brushstroke.
Hello.
Okay, we're just going to do the British thing.
Today.
This is all British. Well, I'm really looking forward to this next batch, this next trooper joining us here. He's dropping down from way up high. He's the dopest, dankest dude on Dagobah. He's CT1006, but you can call him Joints.
Yeah, I'm just saying ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy. In the like least, that's like one of the most British things you could say, but in the least British way possible.
Yep. Yep. I don't do accents.
Don't do accents. Okay, well, listen, batches. You know, we've got a lot to get through. Normally, I'd start off by asking you like something stupid, like, have you ever fought a bear or something like that? But but instead, we're going to get right into this week's episode. Episode 14, Flash Strike. Directed by Nate Villanueva. And just before I get into the story this week, for the purpose of our discussion, I've decided to rearrange the plot into three separate narratives that follow the three narratives that we follow in this episode. So we're gonna talk about the Batch's jungle escape, then a little bit of Omega, then Echo, and then back to Omega. So we start this week with some intense music as we join back with the Batch in hyperspace, and we see the team is forging a plan to avoid the base's sensors from detecting them when they come out of orbit. They plan on detaching and landing in the jungle. Crosshair reminds them just how dangerous the jungle surrounding Tantus is, a little foreshadowing there. Echo, meanwhile, knocked out the trooper who almost found him and managed to hack the ship's systems. Clone Commando Scorch informs Hemlock that there's a security issue with the science vessel, and they know that Clone Force 99 managed to infiltrate the station over Coruscant. Hemlock takes all necessary measures to ensure that they won't be a problem and sends fighters out to take care of them. They manage to find the Batch pretty much like right away and shoot them down, and we see their ship starting to descend rapidly. Hunter does all that he can and even manages to take out one of the ships chasing them. But they don't have time to make a secure landing, so they decide to, much to Rampart's dismay, rappel out of the ship as he, quote-unquote, Hunter helps him jump out, if you will. Hemlock,
maybe my favorite part.
Yes. Hemlock, unconvinced, has a search team sent out to scout the crash site, and he also requests that the science vessel is searched and scanned. So let's get into it. What did you think, Megan, of this action-packed opening and Rampart's quote-unquote abilities during
or lack thereof?
Lack thereof, yeah.
Oh my god, first of all, the moment you mentioned this intense music intro, I was like laid back on my couch, pressed play, and immediately shot up because of the sound of this intro. I was like, oh, this is important.
Yes.
It was beautifully orchestrated. Gorgeous, gorgeous soundtrack. I mean, we've been talking about that this whole season, but it just keeps happening. So, One of my favorite moments in this episode, aside from like really cool stuff we'll talk about later, Rampart's scream as he dropped.
His multiple screams. Oh, like the yelp of what, and then his screams following that. Like,
I didn't do my research here. Who voice acts for
Well, that
Rampart?
Was, I was actually reading that scream was the, what's that famous scream that we always hear?
The Wilhelm scream? Wilhelm?
Yeah, it's like
that doesn't sound anything like the Wilhelm.
Oh, apparently it was supposed to be. I don't know. I had read in I think Jennifer Corbett actually tweeted it in regards to it. Might have been like inspired by wow. that. So, but I like yeah that scream.
It really, sounds real.
It does, but it also just highlights how much of a coward.
Absolutely.
Rampart actually is, right? Like,
oh, I mean, at this point, I'm on the guy's side. That is not a, you know.
Yeah.
Scream worthy situation, yeah. I'd say.
Yeah, shout out to Noshir Dalal, who voices Rampart for okay. those very realistic
fantastic
screams. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think, great job.
I think, you know, the you really learn who a person is when they are falling to their death out of a crashing ship. But I also wanted to shout out the, you know, you talked about the sound of his screams, but also the music. The Kyners obviously are killing it. I know we say that every week, but I wanted to shout out the sky in this sequence. Just looked absolutely incredible. I think the last time we saw clouds like this, in my recollection, was like Andor kind of was Ooh. The time that I got those cloud vibes. I mean, we've probably seen them before in other parts of Star Wars, but I just thought like that's what kind of reminded me of is when they're flying in Andor.
Mm. Well, and I just want to talk about a little bit that you said, cool callback to them going into the jungle and Crosshair talking about how dangerous it is. It's also like callback in the future, I guess we'll talk about it a little bit later, because there's like a reference to the very first episode of something we find in the jungle.
Yes, yeah,
so there's
okay,
a
yeah.
few of those like
a little bit of foreshadowing
episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, yeah.
I just love how this intro manages to pick up the tension from last week without any hitches, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
it was like immediately right back into it, and you're like, oh right, this is the dangerous mission we've ever seen them on, and we're still in the middle of it. So it was a really cool way to again pick up what was set up in the last episode and continue going from there.
Yeah, the momentum mm-hmm. at the end of the last episode is definitely carried at the beginning of this, that, you know, you're excited, you're you know, you kind of have this moment of pause while they're in hyperspace, and then boom, you're back into it. And when they get into the atmosphere of Tantus and whatnot, the immediate, I guess you would call it a dogfight, that takes place was just, it really
so
does
cool.
throw you into it. But then that's kind of it for the episode, right? So it just kind of, that was the high octane energy of this week's episode, in my opinion, is this opening bit that really does, again, continue that momentum from the last episode.
I mean, I do think it picks up a little bit later that we'll definitely get to, but just, you know, on that high octane, I thought that the maneuvering that Hunter does mm-hmm. to turn the, like, completely cut the power to the ship and then turn the ship around and blast yeah. that one ship, like, I kind of forget how good of a pilot he actually is, because I don't know if we really get to see that too, or we haven't gotten to see that at least for a while, so mm-hmm. it's just so good.
Yeah, who have we seen do that?
It's happened. It's a callback to like Star Wars things that have happened.
Yeah, okay.
We've so it's happened. It's happened in many instances. I don't know if it happened in Andor. Did Boba Fett do it once in Book of Boba Fett?
Yeah, I believe Boba did it.
I think
once.
We know Mando's done it. I'm pretty sure.
Rey and
Mando's,
Finn did
yeah.
it.
Rey
Falcon
and Finn.
I was gonna say.
Yeah. So yeah. So I think it's
the whole
just,
stalling yeah. and shooting was it's yeah. been
yeah.
done before.
Yeah, and it's like that subtle Star Wars Easter egg callback, right? Where it's like,
which is really cool. A yeah. cool way to connect this to the rest of the universe.
And every time they do it, it's like they can do it in a thrilling way that it's exciting, right? Like it is,
every
like you said,
it's
yeah, exactly. It's always exciting, and yeah, it's a really cool, it's a simple thing, but it's really cool how they pull it off. Like I know the ones in Mando, after some of them, I was just like, woo, you know what I mean? And definitely
yeah,
for
like
this
jacked up.
Yeah, definitely. And that was how I felt for this again, just as he drops and then, you know, he fires back up and then shoots. It was perfect. It was so good.
And I'll take that over like the 900th. I've got a bad feeling about this.
Sure. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, yeah, that's that been was beaten over the head so much.
Yes. So this was a lesser known of the callbacks. But let's keep going here. In the jungle, Wrecker and Cross. That's just how I wrote it. In the jungle, Wrecker and Crosshair make their way through the jungle towards the end, towards the base, anticipating that Hunter would be doing the same. Crosshair assures Wrecker that he's been here before, so he knows where they're going. He tells Wrecker that while he'd rather not break into the base, that Omega didn't leave him behind when she could have. Mm-hmm. They manage to meet back up with Hunter, and unfortunately, Rampart is okay, but they quickly have to hide as the Imperial troopers begin to sweep the crash site and then circle into the jungle. During the walk, Rampart questions Crosshair's loyalty, saying he's like him, loyal to no one but himself. But Crosshair says he's changed, even though Rampart doesn't believe him. So, Megan, what did you think prompts Crosshair's assertion that he's changed, and why do you think Rampart doubts him despite their shared experiences?
I mean, this like broke my heart when Crosshair said that, because it was like the perfect connection and the development that he's had in this season. One of my favorite characters this season, for sure, if not over the entire series, because of what he's gone through. Mm-hmm. He looks back at his hand too when he's twitches, like walking through, yeah, and like remembers that feeling. I think he truly has changed. I think we've watched him change.
Yeah.
But to Rampart, he's the same guy from before, just because of his very quick and minimal interaction he's had with them, mm-hmm, around this time. So, I mean, I think throughout the rest of this episode, we watch Rampart see that that's not the case. And we're going to see it more throughout, hopefully.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Meg. I think this is the instance where we as the audience feel confident in knowing that Crosshair has changed. He has come a long, yeah, way. And Rampart only knows a small fraction of who Crosshair is, while we as the audience know so much about his journey and what he's gone through. The conversation is really interesting because it shows two different sides of how the Empire have wronged these two, the clones, mm-hmm, and you know, the impact it's had on Crosshair, the hand twitch, the sort of loss of identity, loss of like sort of sensibility of understanding his own purpose and his own value. And then you kind of have a similar juxtaposition with Rampart and the way he's being handled as a bit of a martyr and you know, set as an example based on, you know, I think orders that were given to him. Right, he was an scapegoat, and you kind of see this in this instance, them both having been wrong, and then Crosshair calls that out by the Empire, but from different ends of the spectrum, which I think is going to give pause and sort of a moment. It gives more of an impact on Rampart, because I think, as I was saying last week, I think he's going to have some sort of a, you know, we think he's doing something bad, but he's not, right? I don't know. Again, we have one episode for a lot of shit to happen.
That's, yeah, the thing.
So like, I don't know, but like the significance. It feels significant to have that conversation. Why else would you isolate that moment if not to, I guess, highlight the, you know, what was obvious to us for the last little bit of this season is that Crosshair's now fully motivated by the keeping Omega safe and cares about Omega and you know, respects her in a lot of ways. I think that's the biggest thing. He respects her and sees her as almost an equal. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm, I think that, you know, him having this moment of just, you know, she wouldn't leave me behind. I think that's, you know, that's just affirmation of what we already knew, I think.
And I love that how he sort of delivers that line of the fact that she is equal. Like, I owe it to her. It's, mm-hmm, it no longer is she's not a liability, right? She's not a kid. If anything, he's learned more from her this season than she's learned from,
exactly,
him. And so I think that's earned his respect, mm-hmm, and we've seen that. And so he sees her as another member of the Bad Batch, full stop, which is really cool. And I think that's really lovely because, again, we always sort of, like, we joke and we call them the Dad Batch or the brothers, but they, you know, I think he really does see her on the same level, and I think that's made apparent by that line. And then just in terms of just kind of the idea of the foreshadowing of what Rampart is saying there, though, in terms of, like, sure you have, part of me wants to think like, okay, Rampart doesn't believe that he himself can change. So therefore, there's no world in which Crosshair can change because he sees them as so similar. Mm. Obviously, Crosshair doesn't. But the other part of me, there's like a slight musical swell that happens after he says, sure you have, that I'm like, is that hinting that Rampart knows something that maybe we don't about Crosshair? I don't know.
I think it was honestly just, again, to paint the picture of how they are different. The fact that Crosshair, while they have gone through the same experiences and are both scapegoats to the Empire, mm-hmm. and, you know, cast off to be forgotten and just left to rot, basically. Crosshair has the family unit of the Batch, and they welcomed him back and understood what he was going through and said, Omega wasn't going to leave him behind even after all the stuff that he put them through. So, mm-hmm. like, that forgiveness that he immediately got from the people he cares about most instantly changes him from Rampart, because it shows how he can change and there is room for growth because the family can see him doing that, whereas Rampart has none of that support system. He still thinks that he was wronged by the Empire and that he needs to find a way to right it, basically.
Hmm. It's like Voldemort.
Yeah.
He was born out of a love potion, so he doesn't mm-hmm. understand love. Mm-hmm. Rampart
spoilers. No, I'm just kidding. If you haven't watched
Rampart
Harry Potter
was
yet.
Born out of the Empire, yes. so right. he doesn't know any different. Mm-hmm. He can't yeah. comprehend actually caring and giving a poop about other people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is very telling of where the Empire is, given the fact that, you know, I know it's not mandatory to watch, but like things like Andor kind of fill in mm-hmm. that background of understanding the sort of the disillusion that people have when they're within the mm-hmm. Empire, thinking that they might be doing right and how things all sort of work together. So,
yeah, that's one thing I think Star Wars does really well, actually, is give us this vast universe of all these stories that coalesce and fit with one another. However, you don't have to take everything in. You can get good stories out of each individual piece of the universe without having seen other things.
Nate always says it best. It's Star Wars is just made better by more Star Wars. And when you as an audience decide how much more Star Wars you want to put into your life, you want to watch or consume, that just helps to amplify the existing story that they're already telling, right? So
yep.
And I think it's one of the unique aspects about the Star Wars fandom in general, and I think that's very, from a marketing perspective, it's very smart for that to be designed that way, but it's very true. I want to shout out a little detail again in the animation, and Justin, I thought you would appreciate this as well, is there is a very, it's a very really quick but really cool shot when the Empire is flying overhead and Hunter, Wrecker, and Rampart are looking up, and the focus of the lens is on them and the ships are like blurred out naturally in the mm-hmm. background. And it's just, it's awesome to see, especially when you go back and like, because I was like looking up clips today of kind of early Clone Wars stuff, and it's just incredible to see how far we've come to the point where now it's no longer about necessarily even just how gorgeously these characters are animated and how they move, but even the way that this show is so cinematic in how it's like captured, like they're using different cameras and different lenses in an animated, you know, world. It's just it's awesome to see.
Yeah, it's cinematics, right? Like, you know, I think mm-hmm. I think the reality of early animation and even today, you know, X-Men 97, when you look back at old school styles, it definitely is like the fourth wall. The camera's always placed at the fourth wall. It's almost like a theater, like a stage set, right? And things move between within that space. But now animation has evolved so much that it's about putting the camera in the situation, putting it in the perspective of these characters to amplify the storytelling beats and to give it more of a purposeful cinematic aesthetic. And the show has just been delivering that since season one, right? But that's also how much Lucasfilm Animation and the entire team have adapted and grown the visual look of these animated shows, with things like the final season of Clone Wars was just, that was sort of the signature of like,
so
we're
gorgeous.
In a new territory of animation, right? And
I'm sorry, even the trailer for Tales of the Empire,
When we get those, when we get the opportunity to watch those, it's going to be like immediate.
Like that's even better than this show.
Yeah.
How?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. I'm not.
The animation, sure. Animation quality is like you've already progressed even further every single time you release something new.
The technology is always evolving. I imagine it gives them more opportunities and stuff like that to do things. But yeah, to your point, it does feel like everything is in the animation canon of Lucasfilm is just working on what they've already done and just going further with it.
And I think it's one of the things that, again, it's not a competition. It's not a animation versus live action, whatever. But until they can create invisible floating cameras and camera operators, like you can do things in how you capture this animation that you can't do in live action.
Just an FYI, Pixar has actually invented / utilized some of that mentality with VR and using iPads and stuff like that to put the camera in perspective, so you can get more of an authentic handheld look that is driven by a camera operator in a 3D environment virtually. And it's kind of like leveraging Unreal Engine 5 to a certain degree with how they use it for the volume and how it's like sort of threaded to the camera, so that anytime the camera's positioned at a specific angle, the volume readjusts based on that. So it's pretty wild to see. It's so articulated. So to bring that into an animated space with sort of handheld cameras, that does really open the door for things to feel like super handheld and intimate. You know, imagine like a big explosion happens and then you follow a person and you just track them through as they walk through, and it just feels like, you know, it's just a long take. It's a oner style in animation. It would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. The whole Pixar thing, they've literally started doing this thing where, and you can see early development of it when they create the 3D modeling digitally, and there's like this little cube that is the camera, and it's showing all the different angles that they're going to be at.
Spatially,
so you can see its placement, the spatial awareness of that. But now they are taking it a step further so that the person who's either animating and needs to see it, or whoever it is that needs to step into that, can actually put themselves in the world and inform their animation and their work from that.
I haven't read much about it myself. I know that there was some press stuff that happened at Pixar Studios for Inside Out, and someone had posted something in regards to some of this being shown off as in relation to how they filmed Inside Out too. So it'll be interesting to see more and hear more about it. If we get any interviews, I'd love to talk about what that technology looks like and what it does.
In the making of.
Yeah, it'll be there for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pixar, if you're listening, give us a Blair Witch style movie. Would be dope. Doesn't have to be scary, because Megan won't watch
excuse
it.
Me?
But you know what I mean, like a handheld. Anyways, documentary style. Okay, so let's keep going here. While deciding how to proceed, the Batch take a short moment to discuss while Rampart, frustrated by their stalling, decides to take a seat. Unfortunately, he lays down on that giant bear monster that we saw at the beginning of this season. As it attacks, he demands they blast it, but Hunter doesn't want to give away their location to the nearby Imperial troopers. Wrecker gets violently knocked back by the beast, and Hunter and Crosshair help him back up. The troopers discover them, but they have to then contend with the beast. And after escaping the chaos, Crosshair notices that Rampart's not with them. Because, like the coward he is, he ran away screaming again until he trips and falls right on his face at the feet of the Imperial troopers searching for them. So, Darcy, what did you think of this bear monster encounter? And what do you think is going to happen to Rampart now that he's been caught?
I mean, the bear, it was a really cool callback to the first season and how dangerous these forests are, that we saw the apex predator twice now. And in the second one, they, again, with Crosshair and having his brothers with him, they were a bit more prepared to handle him, but still had to run away. Still really cool to see the teamwork there. I mean, Wrecker jumping on the back of that thing was just like, he has
wanted him
no
to
fear,
ride it. So
afraid of heights, and that's it. Like, he's afraid of heights, and that's where it ends, because I don't understand why he thought that he could win that fight in that regard. But again, Rampart, I don't see this ending well for him or the Batch. Again, I feel like he's just gonna blab everything he knows to Hemlock, so he'll be even more prepared than he already is, because again, his response to hearing that slight security breach, he was immediately like, lockdown, they're coming, I know what's up. So it's, I feel like it's only going to be harder for them to get in now unless we see this, you know, Rampart heel turn type thing. I don't know.
That's the thing. I think that there has to be something there.
There's got to be a reason he's still with them, right? Like, why would, because he's not useful to them. As soon as the troopers, you know, notice that he's no longer.
No, he's a liability. Like right. You said, Omega
just
isn't.
Let him go
anymore,
into the forest.
Still is.
Yeah, let him go into the forest. Send him on his way. Thank you so much, Rampart. Bye bye.
Come bear. Yeah, it's fine. No one cares. Like,
so for them to even just keep him, I understand that they're nice people, and whatever. So they're not just going to do that. But I just feel like it's just he doesn't. We don't like. They don't need him, but the show still needs him. And I hope we have enough time in the next episode to find out why.
Yeah, I also don't think that, obviously, this is the type of show that's going to show, you know, Crosshair walking Rampart off to the forest to just off him, right? Or something like that.
Amazing!
It would be pretty cool.
He shot another Imperial officer before?
That's true.
Well, I wonder if he's been captured, they're going to take him to Hemlock. He's going to try to save himself by blurting out everything. And then the camera will focus on Hemlock facing away from him. We'll hear a blaster and then a body fall to the ground.
Whoa.
And he'll get killed, but have told Rampart or Hemlock everything he needs to know.
Mm. That's interesting.
I think he's dying. I thought he was going to die by monster eating.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nate. I think he has no purpose. He should have fallen to his death. That would have been great. Mm-hmm. Or like someone lets him go. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like it could have been funny. It would have been interesting if it was Crosshair that ended up letting him go. And it's like, how much has he really changed? But, mm-hmm. you know, like there, to your point, there has to be a purpose as to why he's sticking around. So maybe if we get, but I don't know, like this whole bear monster encounter, again, action's great. This series has only amplified its ability to do action in a really great way with these awesome set pieces in animation. But, and I appreciate the callback, but I don't know. Haven't we all done, we've done this before, right? Like can we not have something that's, you know, new, that's inevitably moving the episode, you know, the story forward to our season finale, like
in our penultimate.
Yeah, in our penultimate. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I thought we were already past those things. I was hoping. Again, this is me just feeling like, what is the next episode? How long is the next episode?
How much of the next episode have we already seen based off of what we got in this episode? I understand that.
Exactly.
I think, you know, there's an element to that circular, you know, it's poetry, they rhyme. Like Megan, you even just describing a scene where that's how Rampart is taken out, I'm like, that sounds awesome. That sounds so perfect because that's literally kind of one of the first big moments that we saw of Rampart. And mm-hmm. so to have it kind of turn the other way around would be really cool. We should get on this writer's team. No offense to the people writing the show. Obviously, they're incredible. But like, I think we could do a good job. But yeah, let's keep going here. Back in the vault, Omega and the other younglings hear blasts and explosions outside. Omega says her brothers have found them. And Emery tells her team to follow lockdown protocols and that she'll secure the lab. She then commands Scalder to watch over the children, and Scalder comments on Emery's concern for the specimens and how it's unwarranted. And Emery quietly disregards her. Justin, what did you think of Omega's reaction to the blasts outside, as well as Emery's reaction to Scalder's remarks?
Oh, Omega's reaction was super cute, and it definitely was like this
laser
moment of
cannons. She's so stoked.
Yeah, exactly. She yeah. like she knows her brothers, right? And I love that. That's really great and to see. So yeah, that was cool. I think Emery's reaction to Scalder, it's this classic Empire thing. I have power, I have authority, listen to me. This, you know, Scalder's character obviously doesn't have any respect for Emery, doesn't think she deserves to be the head of this program, and you know, there's obviously, she recognizes that there's an affection to these test subjects, as Scalder calls them. But yeah, I don't know. It's another one of those elements, just like we were talking with Rampart, you know, this whole back and forth between Emery and Scalder's, like, how is that going to unfold in next week's episode, right? Like, how is that going to really unravel?
I mean, I feel like this, like Skaldr and Emery's little exchange there is just kind of foreshadowing for what we see by the end of this episode, even with the fact that Emery calls them the children and Skaldr calls them the specimens. It's just like, no, Emery clearly sees them as actual, you know, living human beings or empathy, beings now. So she cares. She's going to try and get them out of there type of thing. So that was almost like a little nod to what's to come. My main thing is, I meant to talk about it last week too, but do the kids not understand accents? Because they're calling her Omega. They're calling her Omega, like they don't get that her name is actually Omega. Yeah. And it's, I find that hilarious. That is some like great attention to detail for like, kids who were raised in, you know, seclusion probably wouldn't understand the concept of an accent. So when she says her name's Omega, they're like, oh, it's Omega.
Oh my God, and all the scientists around them also have the same accent that Omega
exactly.
does.
Yeah. So they're like, oh, her name's just Omega, even though none of them have accents. That's just how they say her name.
Fantastic detail.
It's such a cool little thing. Again, like the way that they, the voice actors, I don't know who it was or whatever. It's just like, that is a fun little thing to kind of nail down for these kids to be really, you know, secluded and separated from what they
know.
That's
interesting.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Well, and we even get it. We get that later when that, when she's like, when they're like, cover, like, what do you cover you?
True.
Like, what are you talking about?
Mean?
Right.
Yeah,
like how, so yeah, they've definitely just, they've been in these labs for so long and you got to imagine they were probably Baron's age.
True.
You know, the little Tarlafar that Justin thinks I look like.
The species, not the baby.
Okay. You're good.
Like you could be the mom that was taken out, right? Like,
I appreciate that. I have a very motherly sort of vibe.
Just
to
those
me,
hips.
I know.
Those hips, bro.
Yeah.
They don't lie.
The hips don't lie. All right. So, okay. So where were we? I've been thrown off by the hips don't lie.
Flattered.
Yeah. But, just before we keep going, I did want to just mention, I think Omega, seeing her excited by hearing laser cannon outside and where the other kids are scared and she's excited. Like, she's ready to go on that next adventure. She's ready to get out of there.
She's ready to go home.
But she's also, ready to do what she's wanted to do forever, which is free everyone and everything. She just always wants to free everyone. So so this is, you know, this is her kind of longing to do that. And it's just, again, when you see where she's come from, the notion to want to free everyone just obviously makes all the sense in the world. So, so while the rest of the Bad Batch face the dangers and the chaos in the jungle, Echo infiltrates Tantus base by disguising himself as an Imperial stormtrooper, stealing the hand off of a Scottish droid, and eventually finding himself in Nalisse's lab, where he's discovered by Emery, who recognizes him. Echo tells Emery they aren't just here there for Omega, but all the prisoners that she's been experimenting on. He says Omega saw something in her, and he wants to believe that she was right. Emery tells Echo where Omega is, but if he wants to free her and the other children, he's going to have to trust her. So, Megan, Emery is fully on board now with Echo, and obviously we've been seeing this more and more over the course of this season. What kind of advantage do you think this is going to give them in this final episode?
Oh my God, she's got all the ins and outs. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
That's crazy advantage. The moment she said Echo, another shot straight up and like giant gasp out of me because I was so excited that she didn't like flip out.
Yeah.
She knew who he was. She was like, perfect. They're here. They've come to rescue Omega. I can now do my part. And like Echo informs her more of how much she is not part of the Empire. She is a clone. These are her family members. Like, what are you doing? It's such a cool moment in the show, such a great reveal that we saw coming, but it was built up really well. They are going to, I don't know if they're going to have an easier time, but it's good to know that they're going to have the help of like knowing the ins and outs of Tantus now because they have Emery on their side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it's you have an inside man or woman, that knows the ins and outs of this lab. So it's gonna present an advantage, especially given the fact that Echo can just hack into anything. yes. So like beyond that, right? So now they can just do it with the idea of a guide. In a lot of ways, I think this was the beginning of a new Emery in a lot of ways, like this little speech, because I think it reinforces the voice that she was ignoring the entire time. So when Echo was there to speak truth and to drop this sort of sense, it allowed her to openly feel confident with acknowledging how she felt. And the idea that she understood what Echo was saying, therefore she formed an alliance. And I just think it is that turning point for her, because, you know, she stayed quiet. She's kept her head down. She's doing her work. She has her opinions. We've seen that sort of unfold, but she has no one to talk to about it. And she's not going to start talking to Omega about it, or really she wasn't even given the opportunity to talk to Omega about it. And also just, she's still figuring it out. I think, you know, her conversation with Nala Say definitely helped to push her. Right. And the idea that, you know, I think Nala Say ends her comment with, you know, I think it's Emery who says, I don't have any power. And then, she, you know, Nala Say says, don't you? And I think now she recognizes with Echo, she will have power. She does have power. Mm-hmm. She has strength in numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like there's a decent amount of mixed emotions mm-hmm. for Emery in that moment. You know, she's obviously feeling very guilty when she says the line, you know, I was just doing my job. And she, you know, you can, in the animation, I mean, it's incredible in her face, but in her voice especially, you can hear how much she really doesn't believe that, and how guilty she feels. But at the same time, there's that elation of, I'm not alone now. I've got people, I've got other people that can help me save Omega and save these kids and hopefully right my mistakes. I think she's going to die. I really do. No. I think she is going to smile while watching Omega and all the clones and whoever they're going to save escape as the facility explodes around her. I think that's the last that we'll see of her character.
That would be epic.
I think that would be really epic. Maybe she'll have a happy ending. She'll go live on Pabu or whatever. But I would love to see her, you know, have an epic, like, you know, kind of redemption moment to just sort of
death.
She
right.
Yeah, she deserves that. And I think that's the same. That's how, like, that's why I think she's likelier to be the one of the characters in the next episode to die over someone like Rampart. But, you know, the way Meg described that scene, I really do hope it happens.
We're going to need more than one episode.
It would be great closure. It would also be really cool to see, you know, again, the callback to season one, which I completely forgot before. But when you guys mentioned it, I was like, oh, right. That would be that.
It could be the
poetry.
Very first thing that happens in the next episode.
Sure. He gets sat down and, you know, Hemlock is drilling into him and, you know, he's trying to play cool with him. I think it could happen. But back to Emery, she's gonna die. I think it's for her character to have a closing arc, it makes sense.
I can see it happening. I can also see it not happening because Omega's involved.
Sure.
And Omega wants everyone to get out of there, and she's got, you know, the power of plot armor on her side. So I really like the idea that you are so focused on the fact that it's a Scottish droid's hand, and like, isn't Hu Yang Scottish? Like, David Tennant's a Scottish guy, and pretty sure he's Scottish.
Does he have
the accent though?
Yeah, I think so.
It didn't sound also, as Scottish as this.
There are not technically any Scottish accents in Star Wars. There's no Scotland, so.
Well, then where did all the accents come from? There's no New Zealand either.
I don't know. That's where we got our accents from.
Right.
Again, that happened a long time ago in a galaxy far,
far,
far
away.
We just got everything.
The galaxy's made up of a lot of
Hollows, basically.
People from New Zealand, that's for sure.
But going back to the whole Echo Emery conversation, I really like the fact that Echo just throws the whole "you're a clone" back in her face.
Yeah.
Whenever a clone gets to do that, and again, we see it a lot in this series specifically, but just seeing that is, I think, again, another one of those things where it's like, oh, we are going to get a turn from her. She is on the right side now because she realizes that she has a family and all her clone brothers. And it was a really sweet moment.
Didn't Omega also say that to her face?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
She's like, you're,
yeah, it's happened a couple times.
You're a freaking clone.
Yeah.
Crazy.
She already tried to.
I want to swear.
No. That's fine. She totally already reinforced that. And I think that again, that's been sitting inside of her. That's part of this.
She keeps getting reminders.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, Echo being there, just reinforces that there's an opportunity here for her. Right. And like Nala said, like, you know, you do have power, and now she does. She has power by numbers, and she has this idea of, like, she, you know, she's not alone. And I think that's the main difference now.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of the interaction with Cut back in the Clone Wars, the clone who like defected and left the war. But it's interesting how it is more on the other side, whereas that was more like you've left and you know, Cut was kind of ahead of his time here, where now we've got you know, a full group of Bad Batchers that we're rooting for on the opposite side. So it just had that similar amount of like sort of feeling or vibe to it. But yeah, shout out to RA781, Steven Stanton, given that great Scottish or whatever accent it was to that droid. Okay, so the kids in the vault become a little bit concerned when they notice their vitals haven't been taken at the normal scheduled time. Omega decides that now is the time to strike, explaining that the kids, if she's not back in time, they got to cover her. And they're like, what the fuck do you mean cover? She climbs through the elevator shafts, avoiding the rapid sample delivery system every step of the way until she finally uncovers a startling discovery. The presence of a Zillow beast. Bum, bum, bum. Skaldr becomes suspicious and heads down to take the kids' vitals. They do all that they can to stall her, which thankfully they stall her just long enough for Omega to get back as if she never left. Once Skaldr leaves the room, Omega tells the kids she found something big and that she has a plan and she's going to need their help. Whew. Okay, so let's get into what's going to happen, Batch. I know we've been kind of talking about what's going to happen in the next episode, this entire episode, but specifically in relation to what is the Empire doing with a Zillow beast, right? Are they, you know, is it a continuation of what we had before?
Yes.
Or, what do you think Omega's plan actually might be? And Megan, I'd like to start with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's always shocking when there's a Zillow beast. I had two more gasps in this episode, one being the first time that the sample delivery flies by her. Oh. I gasped. I was like, whoa, oh my God, careful.
Watch your fingers.
And then when they show the Zillow beast, it's sort of like, it's shocking because you don't expect it, but also this is the second time. There was literally a whole episode in season two about them tracking down this Zillow beast in its different like stages of evolution almost.
Yep.
So that this Zillow beast is obviously the one that they captured in season two.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you say, Darcy?
Recapture.
Or recaptured, because yeah. it was an Imperial transport that
exactly. It was going to Tantus. So this is the one that escaped or that crashed, and it's now there. So we're just seeing the follow-up. And obviously, I think we saw the first indication of a Zillow beast in Clone Wars. I think it was like season two or something like that.
Yes.
And I think Palpatine...
The Palpatine is like he saw a use for it in the genetic material.
Exactly.
Like, this could be a weapon. Let's get it, clone it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And I was going to say, I'm not going to divulge into my theories on the Zillow beast because I have a very specific theory in my head because my husband has his own theory of what he wants to have happen with the Zillow beast. Nate, I know you know that whole thing.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, I'm not going to go into that because I doubt that they have the exact same brain as my husband does.
Maybe.
There are so many things that you can do utilizing, like you said, Darcy, the genetic makeup of a Zillow. They're very difficult to kill. Their armor is impenetrable. Like, there are so many aspects to the Zillow that could benefit the Empire with cloning.
Sure, yeah.
So, I don't know. Is this the thing that the Emperor saw in, like, the first couple episodes of this season?
It would have been too big at that point.
Yeah.
So it's something else.
Yeah.
There's more.
But to your
more.
Point,
what else is in there?
To your point, yeah. We always knew that it wasn't necessarily about cloning the Zillow beast, but extracting what was important from the Zillow beast.
The yes. strongest right? traits.
The strongest traits.
Thing.
So I think
to make the ultimate body.
Exactly. And I think that is yet to still be revealed. But the reason why we see the Zillow beast and what's, you know, why it's there, that's not as much of a surprise, obviously, as you said. We've seen it in the past season. We know that this is sort of a continuation of the story. They got the subject to Tantus. Mm-hmm. So they're probably taking its DNA and mixing it into something else to maybe bring, if it is, you know, Project Necromancer and bring back the Emperor, you know, bigger, badder than ever before, it might be this idea of engineering some of that material into him. I don't know. We'll
or a Star Wars super soldier.
Oh, there you go. Like, but and that's and yeah. that's it. Like a Star Wars, yeah, Star Wars super soldier would be pretty rad. That would be cool. Yeah, I don't know what they're gonna do, man. I feel like there's so much that this final episode needs to do, that you know, it seems obvious that she's gonna let loose on.
Sorry. Yeah. My brain just remembered the end of the Rise of Skywalker when the Emperor is with Rey and there's all those people like
yeah.
in the stands yeah. almost.
Yeah.
Are those clones?
We've
Is there already a description of this and I'm delving into
no,
something that's already been answered?
No, but I think we've talked about this before. I had a similar idea about like the people on Exegol being clones or part of the Sith army, I think is what they're
Sith Eternal
is what they're referred to, right?
Yeah.
And that maybe I remember I think back in when we first saw the first Shadow Trooper, and he says something. I think I spoke about maybe he was technically a member of the early Sith Eternal kind of idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, there's just so much.
Yeah,
Filoni.
Yeah.
The whole size of the vault means that there's got to be something else there more than just the Zillow Beast and the other humans. She was climbing left, right, like she went on a zigzag pattern. How she managed to find the one thing that gave her a plan? Like she's clearly gonna let the Zillow Beast loose, and it's gonna consume all the power, and that'll you can kind of you know. Keep Tantus busy while the Bad Batch makes their escape.
With that's all the clones.
Pretty
well
much,
done.
I feel like that's where it's going. Omega's a kid, pretty easy to picture what she's got in mind.
Yeah.
But there's, again, we got to see reveal about what Tantus is doing exactly. Like, not so much these little snippets. I want to get an answer as to what their goal is before Hemlock ultimately bites it in a very satisfying way or escapes and makes me want to continue the story in some way. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think a kaiju moment sort of feels, again, like we were talking about earlier, like something we've already seen. So
yeah.
If they do want to do that again, make it a small element in their escape.
Yes.
And it doesn't need to be
it's a distraction, for sure.
Yeah, it does not need to be the focal point. So I'm hoping that it's not. I think just before I continue with my predictions, though, I wanted to call out Omega showing off her skills from Hunter. We talked about in previous weeks that she was going to really kind of show off her leadership skills. And I think it's cool here because she's almost already surpassed his teachings in a way where he had to give her, you know, her own autonomy and her own freedom to make decisions. And she already knows the power of doing that, having lived through it. And so when she tells these kids, like, you'll think of something, I'm counting on you. I thought it was really, really cool. It's nice to see. Obviously, she has that trust. She's got trust in everyone a little bit too much. But I do think that the way that lesson that's gone, you know, kind of both ways between Hunter and Omega, it's now paying off. And these kids are kind of like her temporary Bad Batch. And so I'm excited to sort of see that element. I think they might do something like a sort of almost like a Spielbergian-esque sort of side to the episode with the kids. Could be really fun. But I do think I do think that she's going to come up with a plan. I think it would be really cute if they called it Plan Omega or Plan Zero or something like that. Would be really lovely, just as an homage to all their different numbered plans. And I do think Tantus is absolutely going to blow up. I think that Hemlock will survive because I think he moves the project to either Nevarro, which is where we catch up with more scientific stuff happening in The Mandalorian, like future stuff, or it could be the beginning of the facility on Exegol, right? And maybe Hemlock is one of the first Sith Eternal, and he wants to live, you know, forever. And the Emperor is like, well, if you do this for me and make this work, I will grant you, you know, whatever. Like, Hemlock just seems like the kind of guy that just wants more and more and more and more and more power. So I could see them going that way, maybe going a little dark with it. But that's my thought.
Interesting.
That's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really don't know what's gonna happen though. Like
they need an hour, but that's it.
I think the time is what's going to. I'm pretty sure it's standard episode time.
Yeah.
we haven't heard, I haven't seen anything or read anything about it. I'm sure it's out there, but I wasn't able to find it. But yeah, if it's a standard episode time, I don't think we're going to get a lot of answers to things. And I wonder if that's a bit of by design in that there is another animated series around the corner that will probably be announced at some point.
Call it Echo. He's so badass in this episode. Give us a whole show with Echo.
Echo, but not sick. Marvel's Echo, but like Star Wars.
Oh, shoot.
Echo.
Dang. I guess they have to.
Can't. Yeah. Never mind.
I hope that we can get as many, like, get it satisfying, but I feel like, you know, there's just so much that this final episode really needs to do that there's a lot that needs to be crossed off the list, and it's just a matter of what is that one thing that it is going to kind of do.
What is this? Isn't there a symbol for Omega?
Yeah, it's the, like, it looks like a zero, but the bottom's open with two little, like, serifs.
Maybe that's just the title of the next animated show. And it's like her journey from the Bad Batch to the Rebellion.
Yeah,
that would be pretty
interesting.
Cool. That could be pretty cool. Interesting. A lot of ideas. I think
that would be sick.
I think for the finale, though, I think Justin's right. I think tempering our expectations as best as possible, which is so difficult to do as Star Wars fans. But let's get to our final thoughts and score for this episode, which we're going to be rating on a scale out of 5 imprisoned Zillow beasts. See what I did there? Scale. So, all right, brushstroke, go ahead.
This episode was so fun. Again, as I mentioned before, many gasps were had by me. I loved the scream at the beginning. Rampart is a hilarious part in this episode. I loved the arc that we knew Emery was getting, but now have it shown to us and come to fruition. I love Omega learning from Hunter. We've watched her develop and grow over these 3 seasons, and we're seeing every single skill that the Batch has taught her in different aspects. So it's really fun to wrap that up with her leadership and seeing Hunter reflected in her actions. Zilla Beast was cool. The direction this is going is cool. But also it feels weird that we're only getting one more episode and then that's actually the for this show. So I'm sad about that. And also it didn't build me up to expect this like big grand finale. So I'm a little confused on that side. Having said all that, still really enjoyed it. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 imprisoned Zillow beasts.
That's right. Yeah. Nailed it. Nailed it. Justin, how about yourself?
Yeah, I'm with Meg on that last sentiment. But, you know, as I was mentioning, the pluses from this episode were, you know, continuing the momentum from last episode into the beginning of this episode, giving us a great dogfight. The conversation between Crosshair and Rampart really does shed light on the Empire's sort of damage and mental damage and physical damage that it's done to these two characters. But by extension, what they're doing to the galaxy. I think they both symbolize two sides of the same coin, if you will. But outside of that, like Meg was saying, I feel like this episode, these last few episodes have felt very singular. And what I was hoping for as we got towards the end, and again, I realize that it's my expectation, so I'm not throwing it back at you know, it's all being done wrong. I'm just saying I was anticipating that these last few episodes, at least maybe even the last 5 or 4, would have more of a consistent arc that would get us very excited to this finale. And to Meg's point, like even this last episode, I'm just confused. I don't know how I need to feel. And that's why I'm kind of going in now with tempered expectations of they're not going to answer everything. There must be something else that they want to announce after the end of this show that maybe continues some of those questions. We're going to get some sense of closure in this finale, but I don't think it's going to be to everything. And you know, it's really going to be about the Bad Batch and Omega's relationship. Now, at least by extension, that's all I can see as being the most worthy top line thing that season finale needs to wrap up. It doesn't need to answer all the big broad questions about what's going on at Tantus, even though like it's probably going to get resolved, or we're going to get given something and it's going to be a throwaway line, or there's going to be something like we're moving our facilities to Navarro or Exegol and it's like, oh, you know what I mean? Like that's all it's really going to do, right?
That's all I need. 5 out of 5.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I'm very perplexed as to how to feel going into the finale. And as a penultimate, it just doesn't feel like a penultimate. It just kind of feels like another episode, if anything. And it should feel special, especially given the fact that we are, like Mike said, this is the end of this show. So so for those reasons, I'm going to be giving this episode a 3.5 out of 5 imprisoned Zillow
beasties. Darcy, my beastie, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I personally really enjoyed this setup. These three episodes they're ramping to something small, and again, this story isn't over, that's for sure. Filoni is exploring how the Emperor returned, and all these things he has his fingers in are going to lead towards that question being answered, and probably his film, I see, being where we get these answers finally, because with all the stuff that he's got, again, his fingers in, they all are teasing or have some connection back to Project Necromancer in some way. Even with Tales of the Empire coming out soon, with half of it focusing on Elsbeth, we're going to see how her connection to the Emperor formed, and how maybe this, again, that Dathomirian stuff is going to bring the Sith Eternal to be, because a lot of those guys look like zombies to me, and we're very much dead or ghostly type things. So, I see this episode is this series looks like it's going to close the story of the Bad Batch and Omega, and maybe again set up Omega's future journey to join the rebellion and continue the fight something on. Maybe we get a series like we said earlier, maybe that the Batch will be breaking up and we'll see Omega start her own thing. All I know is that this episode, with the fact that we had that wicked continuation with the tension into these really intense conversations where we are setting up these character moments where either Rampart dies or again does that surprising heel turn out of nowhere, or we get Emery again joining the side of the clones and actually fighting for what she believes to be right. I really think this episode does a good job of setting up what we're going to get. And again, the whole Zillow Beast thing, while there is a lot of answers about what needs to, like, what we, the greater picture, I feel like the way that they're building for this, the group story, where we will come to a satisfying end, because we have seen so much growth between the Batch and all their friends. So for that reason, I'll be giving this episode a 4 out of 5 imprisoned Zillow Beasts.
Yeah, I think this episode was a little bit better than the last two episodes. I think we get a decent amount of character moments between the Batch themselves, like you said, Darcy. I think getting to see Echo do what he does best, like, you know, obviously he's you know, gone on many missions since he left back in season 2, so we get to sort of see how his skills have improved even further. But yeah, you know, getting to sort of see a little bit of the other assets on Tantus with the Zillow Beast. There's, by the way, a whole other mountain facility, like, to the left of the one that we've been exploring, which is intriguing. So I don't know if that's going to get explored, but I just hope that we get, I really want a longer episode. I think where I'm going to set my expectations are, if we don't get a longer episode, then immediately my mind is going to go from all the things that we talked about as possibilities to just a very simple, give me a satisfying conclusion for Omega and the Bad Batch, and that's it. If exactly I don't get a satisfying conclusion for Hemlock, Emery, Rampart, all the other clones, the Zillow Beast, you know, that's fine. Right? Give me just something that makes me go, okay, that was really lovely. Get me in the feels, you know, as they say, and find a way to wrap up this series in a way that at least does a good amount to kind of close out their story for now. And of course, giving us an open opportunity to come back to them. So, I'm going to give this episode I gave last week's episode a 3.5. I'm going to give this episode, the penultimate episode, a 4 out of 5 imprisoned Zillow Beasts. But that is it for this week's Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3. We hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you like to listen to podcasts, if you haven't already. And if you want to write into the show with your thoughts or predictions on the shows we cover in Watch Club, well, you don't have to fight off a giant bear man or a bear monster. You don't have to fight off any of them. I guess Wrecker would kind of be like a giant bear man. But Megan, would you let the big, beautiful Batches know where they can reach us by holo message?
Absolutely. They can reach us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or you can reach us on Instagram at wearegeekcentric, or on X, I guess.
On Xigal.
on Exegol at GeekcentricYT.
Also, feel free to join our Discord using the link in our description so we can keep the conversation going on at least for one more week on this series, as well as shows like X-Men 97. And if you want to talk to us about Fallout, we'd love to talk to you about that show and the ending of that show. Oh my gosh. Keep in mind, we have a ton of other great episodes covering the latest in movies and TV shows, including our recent spoiler-free reviews for Netflix's Dead Boy Detectives, Prime Video's Fallout, Alex Garland's Civil War, Monkey Man, Three Body Problem, and X-Men 97. We also have some great interviews out now, like our most recent interview with the executive producer of the Apple original series, Sugar, Simon Kinberg. Justin sat down with him to talk about how that series pays homage to classic film noir, but also gives something fresh at the same time. And as a proclaimed geek, a self-proclaimed geek, Simon shares what he would want to see next for the X-Men. So go check out that interview as well as all of our interviews here on your podcast service of choice or over on YouTube at youtube.com/geekcentric. Again, subscribe, leave a review. It does help us so much. We've got our final episode of this Watch Club coming soon with episode 15 dropping shortly on Disney Plus. We'll have our episode 15 shortly after that. Megan, Darcy, Justin, thank you so much for joining me for this Watch Club. And as we say,
good soldiers follow orders.